Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints Podcast on the UBS Market Moves Podcast channel with my colleague Burkhard Varnhold from UBS FSI. Burkhard, great to be with you on the mic as always. Welcome back. Another busy week with strong earnings and stocks yet again making new all-time highs. Now, while markets confirm, Burkhard, your bullish views on productivity, many investors out there do remain anxious. Are stocks priced for perfection? Is the massive data center boom sustainable? Who wins the U.S.-China race for AI dominance? So perhaps, Burkhard, this week we can touch on these topics.
Oh, absolutely, Dan. I think those are exactly the questions that also came up in almost all my investor meetings this week and last week.
Excellent. So very topical. With that, let's perhaps begin with earnings and markets. Both are at record highs, but Burkhard, do you think they can really keep rallying from here?
Look, I think they can, Dan. I still think that this bull market is bigger than most, much bigger, actually. And so is its productivity, which is really the root cause, which is really driving it. See, in my current this week's UBS Viewpoints letter, I try to draw a few lessons from history. One is that bull markets don't die of old age. Bull markets die when earnings roll over. But we don't see that. We actually see the opposite. We see a strong economy growing even stronger. We see a multi-year productivity boom, which lifts profit and keeps inflation at bay. And here's another history lesson, which is that stock markets are just in the business of setting new highs. That's what they were invented for, I guess, because, you know, we always try to grow our business. Take the S&P 500 as an example. Since 1950, it actually broke new all-time highs more than 1,300 times. And that's since October 1950, when it broke through a big all-time high at 20 points. Remember that? Well, I don't. I wasn't born then, but of course it's now at 7,700 and still climbing. That makes 17 records a year, and that's more than one a month. At least that's a statistical average. And here's another comparison from the history book, which is that the dot-com bubble, which I certainly remember very well, was driven by FOMO, by that infectious, irrational fear of missing out. But today's bull market is driven by the strongest earnings and revenue momentum on record. FOMO, the fabulous earnings momentum, at least for now, keeps valuations at bay, at least for now. And here's just my usual standard back on the envelope calculation, which I mentioned before. You know, the S&P 500's forward EPS grew from 220 in 2022 when this bull market started to around $400 today. And if they continue to grow to, say, around 500 by, say, 2030, and you multiply those 500 with, say, a PE ratio of 22 times, that implies an 11,000 index level.
When you hear those numbers, it's very helpful to paint the picture in one's mind. But how much longer can the productivity boom still carry the day?
Yeah, that's a good question. I remember productivity paradox. I was much younger then, of course. But remember in the 1980s when IBM invented the personal computer and the mainframe, there was the American Nobel Prize winning economist Robert Solow who said famously that he could see PCs everywhere except in the productivity statistics. Well, you know, granted, he was damn right in 1987 when he said it, but he was damn wrong during the 1990s, which I also call Roaring 90s, when U.S. productivity certainly grew almost as much as it does today. So my point being, the personal computer, the internet and mobile telephony did actually create a productivity boom, but the lesson is that there are often gaps between innovation and productivity, and that's because we don't like change, but it happens. Let me give you another example. So from the first launch of commercial electricity to the rise in industrial productivity gains, that took about 50 years from 1870 to 1920. It took up to 50 years from commercial railroads, trucks, and aviation until globalization delivered global gains. And it took around 20 years from the invention of penicillin in 1925 to slashing worker absenteeism to shortening hospital stays and much higher productivity of labor, which really only all came in during the 1950s. Now, AI, I think, is driving productivity already, and I think that's pretty much irreversible and ubiquitous. And when you consider the learning curve and the complementary technologies like data centers and power, we expect this to last at least, you know, another 5 to 10 years of productivity gains.
But Burkhard, how much of that is priced into markets today?
Well, sure, absolutely. Look, I actually believe the best is still ahead of us. Here are just a few numbers for context. So the S&P 500 growth index trades at about half the forward PE compared to the dot-com at around 20 times today versus up to 50 times back then in late 1999. Small caps, the Russell 2000, are currently leading Wall Street with a 20% gain year to date and a 15 times PE. If investors were positioning for a recession, you wouldn't see this happening. And meanwhile, the Mag 7 are lagging the other impressive 493, who are up 16% year to date, which suggests a rotation from the innovators to the adopters, which potentially has a long way to run because this is only just starting. And similar things are happening globally, and we talked about this. You know, the rotation from Wall Street to the rest of the world stock market is a similar trade. Once again this year, emerging market Asia leads the way. It's up 20%, followed by global emerging market. They're up 18%. The MSCI ex USA, which is up 14%. Among countries, even Korea, this and last year's best performer, still trades at a single-digit forward PE at around 7 times. That's, of course, because of their fast profit growth. So the numbers, I think, support our view that the best is still to come.
Fingers crossed there, Burkhard, and a big credit to you for calling the bull market by its name consistently. Thank you for that. Now, there's also the U.S.-China rivalry in AI, among other sectors, industries. How should investors be thinking about this?
Sure. I think I have two thoughts on this. For one, China's leaders are very keen students of history. They understand global history just as well, of course, as their own. And the echo of, you know, Mao's great leap forward, his cultural revolution, and then later of Deng Xiaoping's reform and opening up, they're still felt today in Beijing and its desire for social and political stability. And they made China, at least what Deng Xiaoping achieved, the global superpower it is today, which is home to some of the world's most advanced supply chains, manufacturing and technology ecosystems. And this sense of history also shapes their industrial policy approach, which is very different to the U.S.'s, to Washington's. It's not about seeking technological leadership. That prize, at least from Beijing's perspective, may stay with the U.S. while China chooses the 80-20 rule, if you will. But instead, where China seeks to lead is in the race for AI adoption. Beijing is giving, and the regional governments are giving very clear productivity formulated KPIs for things like factory automation, autonomous mobility or semi-autonomous mobility, robots, both in manufacturing and humanoids, digital adoption in services, payments, administration or supply chains. And the evidence, and of course China's impressive industrial policy track record, suggests that they stand a good chance in succeeding here too. And if it also helps, I think, you know, this is another one of those complementary technologies that China today, and few people are aware of this, produces more electricity than the U.S., Europe, and India combined. Now, of course, that's what data centers and AI need. And that's also shaping their policy views and our investment views on China, Asia, and frankly, on this global productivity boom, which we think is here to stay.
Well, Burkhard, very topical and insightful as always. Thank you for sharing with our listeners, our clients, that sense of perspective. And of course, we could continue for much longer. However, let's perhaps leave that for another episode. Burkhard, thank you again for joining us this week and have a great rest of your week. Speak again soon.
Likewise. Thanks for having me. It's always great to touch base with you, Dan. And thank you and speak again soon. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus for a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS. Please visit our website at ubs.com/cio-disclaimer.